Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. This weekend, United Students Against Sweatshops held its 20th annual conference in Columbus, Ohio. Over 200 students gather to celebrate past victories and discuss future strategies. United Students Against Sweatshops is currently working on three campaigns: an international solidarity campaign against Nike to force the company to agree to independent monitoring in sweatshops. The Campus Worker Justice Campaign seeks to secure union contracts for people working on college campuses across the country, and they're still organizing for the Fight for 15. Joining me to talk about how college students are organizing against sweatshops are two guests. Angelis Solis is national organizer with United Students Against Sweatshops. She's organized fast food and retail workers towards a $15 an hour minimum wage in Seattle and leads the organization's international solidarity campaigns. And Angelis joins us from WPLN in Nashville, Tennessee. Hi, Angelis. Welcome to the show.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for joining us. Ben Hensler is General Counsel and Deputy Director of the Worker Rights Consortium. That's a nonprofit that investigates working conditions and promotes labor rights in garment factories in major apparel exporting countries around the globe. Hi, Ben. Thank you for joining us. Welcome.
Hi.
Great to have you. So, Angelis, I want to start off with you because you were at the conference this weekend. Over 200 students gathered to celebrate past victories and discuss future strategies. How was the conference overall?
Oh, it was incredible. Really great gathering.
What was the main focus?
Very powerful. So the main focus of our 20th National Conference is always to equip our students with the organizing skills that they need to win campaigns back on their campuses. But every conference we do a mass action, and this conference in particular, the Ohio State University chapter have been campaigning to stop the sellout of their energy systems. This, this recent move from an administration would effectively deunionize a sector of their university, which is, public at this point, and does have about 50 unionized, primarily black workers on campus. And what the university is trying to do is sell out that system, and a lot of those workers, their livelihoods would be severely affected. So we had a mass march on campus, and we stormed through the library, we stormed through the administration building, and it was very powerful, to say the least.
I have not heard of this before. Can you tell us more about what's happening at Ohio State?
So for the last 2 years, to back up a little bit, Ohio State University is one of the strongest frontiers of a public university in the country. So the reason that we had the conference at this university was to really promote our message that we need to save public education in the face of privatization. Many of our universities are privatizing. They're becoming more like corporations, and this is something that students are outraged against.
And is this something that the students with United Students Against Sweatshops is focusing on? Because with Betsy DeVos, who's now the education secretary, the privatization of education is getting a lot more attention across the country.
Yeah, absolutely. So I would say, USAS as a massive grassroots student movement, the students on their campuses really react to the issues that are going on at the university level. So, there's a large majority of our campuses that are fighting the privatization of their universities and the effects that their universities are having on the larger communities. So it's not often just the workers, but another university in particular is responding to the privatization of their university and protesting the Turner Field purchase in Atlanta. So the Georgia State University chapter is fighting for their president to sign a community benefits agreement, which would effectively delay the gentrification coming from the stadium that the university purchased. Mm. So it is absolutely something students are prioritizing. They want to save their public education. They want to ensure that the universities are not complicit in selling out families and selling out workers. And, in regards to our international work, and not being complicit with the violence in the factories that produce our collegiate apparel.
Right, because the group does really incredible work, and on Facebook you often post videos about students taking over various offices to raise awareness about sweatshops and just where your apparel is made, like t-shirts and sweats and things like mm-hmm. that. But can you tell us just a little bit, for people who are not familiar with United Students Against Sweatshops, since you just held your 20th annual conference this weekend, tell us a little bit about the group.
Yeah. So United Students Against Sweatshops, or USAS, we have been around since 1997. And we are the largest student-led labor solidarity organization in the United States. We have over 150 chapters campaigning for union rights for workers on our campuses, in our communities, and in the collegiate factories producing our apparel abroad.
And you've got a number of students on, 150 campuses across the country?
Yeah. That's a lot of students.
Ben, why don't you jump in here and talk about some of the work that has been done by these students now that they're celebrating 20 years in existence.
Great accomplishments of United Students Against Sweatshops over the last 20 years, and it's really landmark in the field of promotion of labor rights in the garment industry, is first of all simply getting universities to adopt labor standards for the production of their college logo clothes, say around here, your Cal or Stanford sweatshirts and t-shirts and ball caps. Universities simply had no policies in this area until students began to press them on this issue. Just as importantly, the approach that students took was incredibly innovative and effective, which was they got universities to write instead of just making the labor standards voluntary, to actually write them into their licensing contracts with major apparel manufacturers like Nike and Adidas and Under Armour. And these companies, these global brands, had never made these kind of binding commitments as far as labor standards in their supply chains before. And then on top of that, another breakthrough was that students got their universities to require these apparel companies to publicly disclose the factories overseas where these clothes were made. This, again, was something that had never been achieved in the industry and has really set a precedent. Now you see not just Nike and Adidas, but companies that don't even produce collegiate apparel like The Gap, like Levi's, like H&M, companies that don't even make clothes, like Apple Computer, disclose their global supply chains of suppliers. It's a tremendous breakthrough in transparency, and it all started with students on college campuses pressing their universities to require apparel brands to do this. It's just a historic achievement in the history mm-hmm. of promoting labor rights in the apparel industry. And just lastly, they produced the organization I work for, the Worker Rights Consortium, and they got 180 colleges and universities to affiliate with our organization around the country. Almost all of the Pac-10 schools are affiliated. The entire UC system is affiliated. All the Ivy League schools are affiliated. And many of the major public universities around the country are affiliated. For example, University of Texas, University of Alabama, some of the biggest schools as far as the collegiate apparel sector goes are part of the organization.
So let's talk specifically about one of these brands. And Nike is prominently featured on the page called Garment Worker Solidarity. And according to the Worker Rights Consortium, Nike sources its apparel from 680 factories scattered all over the world and has a long history of allowing labor violations to take place in these factories. So, Ben, can you tell us what are the current conditions right now in some of the overseas factories, Nike factories, where collegiate apparel is still made?
Well, I'll just talk about one Nike factory that we investigated over the past year. This is a factory in Vietnam, which is now gaining on China as the largest supplier of collegiate apparel. And It's a factory called Hansae. It's owned by a large Korean multinational. Nike has been doing business there for a number of years. A lot of other major brands do business with this factory. We found conditions in that factory which were as severe as we've found in almost any garment factory around the world. The combination of pressure on these workers from the company management and just the working conditions in the factory led to what we estimated as hundreds of workers every year fainting on the job from the heat levels, from overwork, from pressure on them. Workers were working off the clock during their lunch periods, were having to work off the clock every morning before they actually started getting paid. We found conditions that there were workers who had been having to pay bribes to managers to get jobs in this factory, which were illegal and sort of speak to the desperation of these workers, and also that there was discrimination against pregnant employees, that pregnant employees were that women and female employees were losing their jobs if they became pregnant there. So a whole array of abusive working conditions at this factory, which was a factory that didn't just produce for Nike, but produced for a number of major brands, and supposedly had been had inspected by all these brands, including for Nike, and yet these conditions had persisted for a number of years. We did after we put out our report, Nike has made some commitments to have these conditions in the factory corrected. We're monitoring to see whether that actually is going to happen.
And what is the average wage of these workers for these workers in Vietnam?
Right. So the minimum wage now in Vietnam is around $170 a month.
$170 a month. And how many hours are people working every week?
Well, workers are supposed to work, I think, no more than 60 hours a week. But you know what you see, across the board in this factory and in other factories in the country is that the legal limits on overtime get broken all the time, and so you see factories where workers are working 7 days a week in some cases. The conditions are quite severe.
Yes, 60-hour work weeks, $170 a month. And I'm pretty sure that shoes these days, Nike shoes, still in some cases cost $170 a pair, right?
Right. This is an apparel factory. I mean, Nike sells a lot more things than shoes.
Right.
They're selling clothes, but the point stands. Yeah. These are not clothes. These are name brand clothes. This is not, no name knockoffs. Mm. This is things that consumers in the U.S. are paying enough money where Nike could afford. And the factory could afford these workers to have decent working conditions.
And Angelis, can you talk about what sort of strategies were put in place when students decided to take on Nike and demand that Nike change its positions on independent labor monitoring or lose the right to make college apparel?
Absolutely right. So students understand where their leverage lies. Because they pay tuition, they know that they have leverage over their universities, and we understand that our universities have leverage over entire industries. So that being said, when Nike announced that it would no longer be allowing the Workers' Rights Consortium into their supplier factories, students were outraged. So we waged this campaign against Nike and have employed various strategies to cut their contracts, cut multi-million dollar contracts across our country. We have around 25 universities actively campaigning to cut Nike contracts. We've had two successes. Rutgers and Georgetown have refused to renew their licenses with Nike over this stance. And I do want to emphasize on Ben's point here that Nike had been self-inspecting this factory for the entirety of their time there, for a while there, and they had never reported these abuses. So it wasn't until students campaign to force Nike to let the WRC in that we found out just how bad the conditions were behind our collegiate apparel. And because we're an organization that believes in solidarity, again, I'll say it, you know, our students are not allowing their universities to be complicit in this violence. And until Nike agrees to allow expeditious, independent access for the Workers' Rights Consortium, we do not want to be doing business with a brand that self-regulates. I mean, we have the FDA tell us that our food is safe to eat, right? We want to have third-party inspectors because we want to trust that the food we eat is safe. So we should not be allowing Nike to tout itself as a corporation that just, you should trust them that they treat their workers' rights. We believe in independent monitoring and upholding that as a standard.
Yeah, and to have Rutgers and Georgetown cut ties with Nike is a huge deal. Now, does this apply to just collegiate wear and shops, or does this also apply to their sports teams?
That's a great delineation. Yeah, so what we're seeing in this specific campaign is that Nike has amassed so much capital that they're taking advantage of universities, specifically their athletic departments. What we are seeing in our campaigns is that Nike is holding lucrative business sponsorships or all sports agreements over universities' heads. And, you know, throwing a lot of free gear, free glitz. Our student athletes often get Christmas presents straight from Nike where they get to select, like, okay, well, what's the top 10 things that you want from Nike sent to you this year? And what they're trying to do there is have the universities commit to such a loyalty to the brand that they're willing to turn a blind eye when these abuses are happening right under their noses. Mm-hmm. But like I said, students are willing to let that happen. And despite the large amount of money that Nike tries to throw our way, we're going to continue to fight back. I can speak to one specific example. UT Austin, which has a massive contract, a $250 million sponsorship agreement. You know, the COO and several large executives came down to UT Austin to meet with the USASers, and we stood for the entirety of the meeting in solidarity with the workers at Hanse, who are producing without proper seating and are producing on backless benches for over 10 to 12 hours a day, like Ben mentioned. And it really had them uncomfortable. But that same day, we saw Nike handing out free shoes on campus, and now Nike wants to teach classes in the business school.
Wow.
So Nike is really trying to infiltrate our universities, and students just aren't going to let that happen just because it's a big brand. We're going to hold them accountable, as we have before.
Can you elaborate on that? They want to teach a business class?
Sweatshops 101. No, I mean, Nike is really doing everything they can to prevent the universities cutting ties. And students are telling their universities, since when are you letting Nike tell you what to do? Why are you allowing Nike to violate our codes of conduct? Why are you allowing Nike to find loopholes in our codes of conduct to prevent our severing of ties? And, you know, you mentioned strategies. We had Georgetown that led a successful 36-hour sit-in in their president's office the week before finals and would not leave until their president committed to cut ties with Nike, and they achieved that.
Hmm.
So we're committed to doing what it takes to get Nike off our campuses.
Ben, you wanted to jump in?
You know, I think one thing that should be noted is the problems as far as worker rights in the garment industry, you know, include but are not limited to Nike. I think all of the major brands are complicit in the system of production that rests on workers earning poverty wages and working under severe and abusive working conditions. So what's exceptional about Nike is that among the major brands that produce collegiate apparel, Nike is the one brand that has been refusing to provide our organization, which is the agent for the universities that are affiliated with the WRC for monitoring working conditions in factories making their logo clothes. Nike is the one brand among them that is not giving us access to their factories to inspect the working conditions. Simply being able to get into the Hanse factory took a year-long process from when we first heard about abusive conditions there after workers had gone on strike to let Nike finally let us in, again under pressure from students and from universities, and they've made no commitment as far as whether they're going to let us into other factories where we hear about abusive conditions and need to investigate.
And have they given you any reasoning? Have you been able to ask anyone at Nike about why the Worker Rights Consortium is not allowed to inspect the factory?
I think Nike's position has been that they have their own code of conduct, and they have their own chosen factory inspectors. But that ignores the fact that universities have adopted their standards for the labor conditions they want their school apparel to be produced under by Nike, and the process that universities have adopted their own standards for how they want those to be monitored. And Nike's, and the case of Hansei, this factory in Vietnam, clearly shows that if you leave it to Nike to simply monitor and its own supplier factories and be able to choose who it wants to inspect those factories, then the result is that you can have severe abuses that go on for years without being corrected if there's not an independent looking at what's going on there.
We have a Facebook comment from Robert who says, using cheap child labor while paying athletes millions for ads. And I was just looking up some of the athletes that receive million-dollar endorsements from these companies like Nike, Adidas, you name it. Roger Federer, for example, LeBron James, according to opendoors.com, LeBron James has a lifetime deal with Nike, rumored to be over $1 billion. Tiger Woods is on this list, Kevin Durant with the Warriors. I mean, you name it, and these top sports guys are getting millions and millions of dollars from these companies. Angelis, is this another tactic you take? Do college students ever put pressure on sports stars to maybe talk about the conditions of the people who are wearing who are making the shoes they're wearing and the clothes they're wearing?
Absolutely. And it's something we've employed in the past successfully. We had Selena Gomez, who had a significant Adidas sponsorship with an Adidas campaign that we did. And we pressured her to speak out against Adidas until they paid severance. We have targeted celebrities that have lucrative agreements with brands like Nike and Adidas, and we are planning to do it again.
What is the best way to learn about how people are treated? Because there's so many different companies out there. Nike gets some of the most attention for reasons we were discussing. But what about some of these other companies, like Under Armour, for example? I don't read much about how workers are treated who work at their factories. Where can we find that information? Ben?
So if you go on to our website, www.workersrights.org, one thing that is different about the WRC than other organizations that do labor rights monitoring in garment factories is that our reporting is completely transparent. You can go onto our website and look up by country, by brand, by factory, and you can find the investigations that we've done, and you can read about the conditions that we found in those factories. And you can find out about when we found violations if the brand stepped up and had those corrected. Because in many cases we are able to do that and have brands make sure that violations that we found have been stopped, and where workers are owed money that they're paid back. We've in some cases Nike and Adidas have had to pay millions of dollars where workers were cheated out of funds, and where workers have been fired unfairly for things like union organizing, hundreds of workers have been reinstated. So it's not just you can find out about the violations, but you can find out about whether the brands have stepped up to correct those violations as well.
And Angelis, before we go to break, can you tell us about Alta Gracia? It's the only union-made living wage apparel available for college campuses. This information's on your website. It was formed by workers who previously lost their jobs when brands like Nike retaliated against them for organizing, and they're located in the Dominican Republic. Can you tell us about this?
Yeah, we've had USAS run a large number of Alta Gracia campaigns throughout history and get our universities to commit to sourcing from that factory in particular. And I'll also add that USAS, as a solidarity organization, we don't believe in eliminating these jobs overseas. We believe that factory work does not have to be sweatshop work. And whether it's Nike, Adidas, Under Armour, or supporting Alta Gracia as a model that all factories can eventually one day become, we're committed to making these workplaces dignified and just on behalf of the workers and using our student leverage to get there. But Alta Gracia is a fantastic alternative for universities that want to source from living wage, union-made apparel. I mean, the economic impact on that surrounding area is significant, not just in the Dominican Republic, but whenever a university chooses to do business with a brand that does allow union neutrality or have better working conditions, it's not just better for the universities as upholding themselves as defenders of workers' rights, but it's better for those communities as well, right?
And how many colleges actually buy from Alta Gracia?
Oh, that's
a good question. Is it significant?
I wouldn't have those. I would say that it is. You know, Follett's is another large bookstore supplier, and recently it decided to decrease their orders from Alta Gracia in half. And that's something that students are also outraged about and are campaigning against Follett's for, because Follett's decision to do that is regressive when it comes to labor rights. And it's indicative that a corporation is choosing to source from other union or other non-union suppliers and leaving union-made suppliers like Alta Gracia in the dust. So we're committed to increasing pressure on Follett's to get them to increase their orders from Alta Gracia. But as far as numbers, I can't tell you exactly.
No, that's fine. I'm just wondering if it was a large number. And also, can you talk about the conversations that students are having about whether to focus on jobs in the United States, for example? I mean, we're hearing that from Donald Trump a lot these days, versus ensuring that, for example, workers in the Dominican Republic who are making clothing that you and your, you know, fellow friends, your college friends are wearing, are actually paid a living wage.
I can definitely speak to that. So just to back up a little bit, USAS, the principles of how and why we organize are those of collective liberation. And that's an ideology that no one is free until we are all free. So that being said, we are committed to our international solidarity campaigns, just as much as we are committed to our domestic solidarity campaigns. And to take it up a level, we are also organizing student workers on campuses. Many students are treated as if they're students first and workers second, but the reality is that with, you know, raising tuition and cost of living that's rising in our country, students can no longer afford to, you know, even study at these universities. So our campaigns are intersectional, and we know that the victories and outcomes of our work is in very much interconnected. So under Trump, that's not going to be lost for our students. You know, at our 20th conference, we had an incredible conversation around what it looks like to protect student organizing in a repressive environment, how USAS will continue to love and support each other to win. Not too much time has passed since the tragedies at Kent State, and we've seen shootings and a increase in hate crimes around our university campuses. You know, our students are not safe, there's no illusion of safety on our campuses from the dangers of the Trump administration or alt-right individuals. Our organizing is not viewed as cute or, you know, safe. It's dangerous, but it's necessary. Mm. And our students understand the risk and are continuing to advocate for workers' rights here and abroad, no matter what.
Well, I'd like you to continue that right after the break. That's Angelis Solis, national mm-hmm. organizer with United Students Against Sweatshops. And this weekend, they held their 20th annual conference in Columbus, Ohio. Over 200 students gathered to celebrate past victories and discuss future strategies. We're also joined today by Ben Hensler, general counsel and deputy director of the Worker Rights Consortium. This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this.
This is Your Call on KALW, a show that relies on engaged listeners. You can join today's conversation by calling 866-798-8255. That's toll-free, 866-798-8255. And you can post a comment or question to yourcallradio.org, or you may tweet us at yourcallradio.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will have a conversation with environmental justice activist Winona LaDuke about Native Americans' struggle to protect their lands, waters, sacred places, and treaty rights. We'll also talk about Standing Rock. Winona was active for months in that struggle, so we'll talk about what's to come. That is tomorrow. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback at yourcallradio.org. Today, we are talking about United Students Against Sweatshops. They held their 20th annual conference this weekend in Columbus, Ohio. Over 200 students gathered to talk about past victories and discuss future strategies. They're working on the Fight for 15. They are seeking union contracts for people working on college campuses across the country. And then they're putting pressure on colleges to drop licensing contracts with companies like Nike, for example. And we're talking about this with Ben Hensler, General Counsel and Deputy Director of the Worker Rights Consortium, and Angelis Solis, National Organizer with United Students Against Sweatshops. And if you'd like to join us, we'd love to hear from you. We do fairly regular shows about sweatshops. It's a really important topic. Sometimes people are a little overwhelmed because they're not sure where to get information, and just about everything you find in stores these days is made overseas. You can find things that are not sweatshop made, but you really have to do your homework. So if you have any questions or comments about that piece of the work, we'd love to hear from you. If you're a student involved in organizing against sweatshop conditions or organizing for workers' rights, give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. And then also just overall campus organizing. There's so much happening on campuses across the country, and 150 campuses are involved with United Students Against Sweatshops. You can email feedback at yourcallradio.org. Angelis, before the break, you said something that struck me. And that is that some students do not feel safe right now on campuses. Can you elaborate on that?
Absolutely. After the day of the election, we had over 55 universities join an impromptu conference call. It was like popcorn popping on the phone, just ding, 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 ding. Wow. Students calling in, and it was to discuss, what does this look like for us? You know, we have students who are undocumented on campus, students who are Muslim, Black and Brown students who walked into class the next day and faced comments like, oh, you're still here? Or, you know, walked on the campus and saw Viva la Deportacion written in chalk. And this is really scary for a lot of students who already college is such an intense life shift, to now feel that their identities are no longer even in the margins, they're targeted. So USAS in particular, because we are a leader in the student movement, we led over 30 student walkouts on the day of the inauguration. We have direct action trainings led across campuses in place of classes when students walked out, so that students would know how to protect themselves and that allies knew how to stand up for their comrades as well. So this is something that USAS is prioritizing, and the reality is that students, especially students who are out there protesting, organizing, know that under this administration, we really need to be careful, but at the same time, braver than ever to continue doing the good work and keeping up the fight.
Wow, it's amazing that you were able to get people from 55 different universities on a call right after the election, mm-hmm. because so many people are concerned. What are you hearing from some of the immigrant students who are involved with United Students Against Sweatshops?
Fear. There's a lot of fear right now. But on the flip side, I would also say that this is a time where students more than ever are looking for a place to channel their anger and to channel their frustrations. And I would say that USAS, we very much as a student network, and this was emphasized over the weekend, that we want to organize not out of a place of fear, but organize out of a place of vision and the world that we're trying to create and hoping to create and organize towards. So especially with the recent executive orders, the spike in raids, students this weekend really strategized, okay, what are the concrete leverages our universities have in protecting students? What does Sanctuary Campus actually look like in practice? And what are other ways that our universities can uphold themselves, similar to the garment industry, as defenders of workers' rights, but also in this case, the rights of those living on their campuses, not just students, but the workers in the kitchens who will also be affected by Trump's dangerous policies.
Right.
So because that's who USAS is looking out for.
You also organize for students, but also workers at the universities, whether it's janitors or people who work in the kitchen, for example. A lot of immigrants have these jobs.
Absolutely.
Can you talk about what you've been hearing from them?
Oh, absolutely. I can, you know, it's easy to talk about everything that's scary, so I'm going to bring up, you know, a victory or something that's positive. This weekend, we had the pleasure of hearing from an incredible worker, Heidi Baidedo, who is a dining service worker at Northeastern University. And students at Northeastern University, USAS chapter there, joined in solidarity with their workers to ensure that the school would give workers that day off to go out in the streets and protest the day of the inauguration, and you know, to ensure that there was no repercussions or retaliation for doing that. And I would say that's a powerful demonstration of student worker solidarity on campus, in ensuring that the universities are allowing their workers and students to participate in direct action, to participate in civil disobedience, and to speak up when they feel that they need to use their voice.
Ben, what are your thoughts on what Angelis is saying about fear that students across on college campuses across the country are feeling right now?
Well, clearly, you know, I'm limited in what I'm able to say on behalf of the WRC, because we're an organization that focuses specifically on labor rights in the garment industry. Much of that industry is overseas. So we don't specifically work on immigration policy. We don't, but I have, you know, strong feelings about this, personally, the WRC is not focused on this work, you know, but obviously anything that's going to prevent, students from being able to speak out on issues related to university policy that concerns them, and anything that makes workers specifically more vulnerable to abusive and exploitive working conditions is of concern to us. We've been engaged previously in a number of cases in the U.S. Where workers in factories that we were looking at were subject to immigration enforcement raids, and clearly these things were denying them also their rights to advocate for themselves on their day-to-day working conditions, and were targeting them because of their advocacy on their day-to-day working conditions. So I think these issues fit together very much.
We have a Facebook question from Joe. Do you think that the Trump administration's policies against Mexican immigration will help or hurt labor conditions for low-wage workers?
Right. I think clearly one thing that happens is that workers come to this country for better conditions and with some notion that this is a country where there's a greater rule of law and that their rights are going to be protected. When that's when that's no longer true, then they're stuck under the regimes of their own countries, where that's not the case. And I think what's being left out of the entire debate is that it's very clear that workers in the United States benefit when the rights of workers overseas are protected, and that this should be a priority for anyone who cares not just about international workers' rights, but for people who care about a fair playing field for workers in the United States. Is the only way that happens is when workers' rights are protected, not just overseas, but here as well.
Ben Hensler is General Counsel and Deputy Director of the Worker Rights Consortium, a nonprofit that investigates working conditions and promotes labor rights around the world. Anjali Solis is National Organizer with United Students Against Sweatshops. They just held their 20th annual conference in Columbus, Ohio. 200 students gathered to celebrate past victories and discuss future strategies on the Fight for 15, for example, securing union contracts for people working on college campuses across the country, and then also to continue their work on sweatshops, pressuring colleges to drop licensing contracts with Nike, for example. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. If you have any questions or comments about sweatshops and how things have or have not changed, there's been so much awareness raising. And then if you'd like to also talk about college campus organizing, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Ben, after the horrible garment factory collapse in Bangladesh in 2013, so much attention was paid to sweatshop conditions and the plight of workers around the globe. What has really changed since then? Have you seen any improvements at all?
Well, on this specific case in Bangladesh, where if people will remember, we saw over the space of just a couple years there, between 2012 and 2013, the worst factory fires and building collapses, not just in the garment industry, but in any industry, manufacturing industry, in terms of loss of life, going back 100 years. There were nearly 300 workers killed in a factory fire in Pakistan, so also in the region. There were more than 1,100 workers killed in a building collapse. These were the worst disasters in this industry in history. But this galvanized, because of the public pressure, this finally galvanized brands to take action. And the WRC, working with a coalition of other NGOs and global labor unions representing garment workers and other workers in the apparel industry, was able to get what is now more than 200 apparel brands to sign a binding agreement called the Bangladesh Fire and Building Safety Accord, where they committed to have independent inspections done of their supplier factories in Bangladesh, more than 1,500 factories, and then to commit to require these factories and support these factories in having these safety violations, which were widespread, nearly universal, corrected. Things like hardly any factory actually had a real fire escape. There were many factories with severe structural problems, and that work is very much underway. That more than 70% of the problems that were found in these, the inspections are completed. More than 70% of the problems that were found have been corrected. Some of the most important ones still remain to be done because they're the most expensive ones, and many of these factories are behind schedule on correcting these. But there really has been great progress made in Bangladesh in addressing the safety problems in those factories and addressing this issue. And I think that's one of the bright spots in the global apparel industry in general. One thing that has been happening in Bangladesh over the last several months, unfortunately, is we're seeing an opposite tide in terms of respect for workers' rights to form unions and have a voice to improve their working conditions. More than 1,000 workers have been fired for protesting low wages. Several dozen leading union leaders were jailed for several weeks. So at the same time that we're seeing progress on the issue of factory safety, worker rights in Bangladesh are more than ever under attack.
And
so we see one step forward, one step back.
And just quickly, Ben, some of the major brands that make their clothes in Bangladesh?
Pretty much everybody.
Everyone.
It's the cheapest industry in the world, major exporting country for garments, less than $70 a month for workers. The Gap is there in a big way. H&M is in a big way. Walmart, of course. Zara.
Wow.
All your major brands are there.
$70 a month.
Yeah.
Wow. Ben Hessler is General Counsel and Deputy Director of the Worker Rights Consortium, and Angelis Solis is National Organizer with the United Students Against Sweatshops. They just met in Columbus, Ohio this weekend for their 20th annual conference. We're talking about college organizing, sweatshops, the fight for 15, securing union contracts for people working on college campuses across the country. And let's hear from Heidi in Oakland. Hi, Heidi. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me on. I really appreciate the topic of the show. It's very timely. I wanted to touch in because I've had experience. I'm currently working as part of a facilities team at a private preparatory high school where the students are paying similar to college tuition to get to high school that will prepare them to go to one of these colleges. And the workers I'm one of the workers, at this management team have found out that our management company, it's an international corporation called Sodexo. They're the 18th largest corporation in the world, and they own the Corrections Corporation of America. So they're very large. They own the Marriott chain as well.
Hmm.
And we have never been able to figure out where to go. They're based in France. So where do we go to address our wages? We've had people working on campus for $11 an hour trying to support their family.
Wow.
So, this is here in our country, and so we're, in a sense, kind of in a type of a sweatshop ourselves.
What about management, Heidi? Can you talk to management about wages?
It appears that the chain of communication doesn't exist. There's no chain of communication. So I work underneath a facilities manager who works for Sodexo. Sodexo is based in France. They're international. They're enormous. There's a huge bureaucracy. So,
well, stay on the line. Maybe Angelis can help you. Angelis, do you want to jump in?
Thank you for calling in, Heidi. I would, it's funny that you bring up Sodexo. Sodexo is one of our largest campus worker justice campaigns not too long ago, and we had a large majority of universities campaign and sit in to cut their contracts with Sodexo, and we even had a very notable victory at the University of Washington, Seattle, where we severed a $23 million contract with Sodexo over their union-busting policies. So I unfortunately am too familiar with the way that Sodexo treats its workers within its supply chain. And in USAS, we believe that whether it's a brand like Nike or whether it's a corporation like Sodexo, that they are responsible for every part of their supply chain, even when they subcontract out. But, in situations like yours, Heidi, I'm not sure if if workers on your campus have unionized, but that would be the first avenue I would look into for remediating these abuses on your campus. And in your workplace, it would be looking to form a union and then getting the students to support you in that fight.
Sounds good. And I, again, appreciate this topic. Where would I go for more information from USAS?
You can look at our website at usas.org, and shameless plug, we are very grassroots and we're very much a working class organization, mm-hmm. So feel free to donate on the website, usas.org, usas.org.
Thanks a lot.
Well, thank you, Heidi. We will continue to do shows about this. It's so important. We have just a couple minutes left, Annalise, but since Heidi brought up workers, mm-hmm. on your website, you report that colleges and universities spend less than a third of their revenue on instruction. 75% or 1 million faculty members are part-time or temp employees with little to no job security. 31% mm-hmm. of part-time faculty members are living near or below the poverty level. And, I mean, we're not even talking about people in the cafeterias and janitors, but these are people who are teaching the students.
Yeah, absolutely.
What's the status of that campaign?
Oh, gosh. So we have a large majority of our students running campaigns in solidarity with their adjuncts that are looking to unionize, their graduate students that are looking to unionize. And, you know, one thing that isn't mentioned there is that students are also going into poverty trying to go to school. Mm-hmm. So our students ourselves, our undergraduate students, are organizing non-majority unions and organizing committees to advocate for living wage increases and for more progressive policies around sexual assault, around housing. I'll name three victories just in the last year: University of Washington, Seattle, Columbia University, and New York University. Because of our USAS chapters at those campuses, we were able to win $15 an hour, not just for the student workers, but for all of the workers on campus, right? So UW Seattle in particular, over 9,500 workers received an increase in their wage, which led to a direct economic impact of several million dollars of wage increase across the city and the state.
Wow, those
are... in these instances, we can really see where student power has a role in uplifting the economic situation, not just for cities, but sometimes the state, as universities are often one of the largest employers.
Right. And 2017, mm-hmm. you're going to be working on a number of campaigns, but what are some of the big ones to watch this year?
We'll absolutely be watching our Nike campaign. You can go to NikeSweatshops.org for more information or our website. We encourage folks to do the Nike cover-up challenge where they cover up their Nike swoosh as a protest to Nike because they're trying to cover the conditions in their factory. And we also encourage you to watch our Fight for 15 campaigns across the country and to support students fighting for those rights, as it not only benefits the student, but the communities around the area. And just keep watching our work and support us at USAS.org.
Well, you're all doing great work. Thank you so much for joining us. Annalise Solis is national organizer with United Students Against Sweatshops. Annalise, thank you. Mm-hmm. And Ben Hensler is General Counsel and Deputy Director of the Worker Rights Consortium. And thank you, Ben, and thank you for your work.
Always glad to talk.
Thank you. We'll definitely continue following and covering these issues. Coming up tomorrow, we will have a conversation with environmental justice activist Winona LaDuke about Native American struggle to protect land, water, sacred places, and treaty rights. Winona LaDuke will be at next month's Geography of Hope conference in Point Reyes, talking about what kind of ancestors we will become. And also, after months of being active at Standing Rock, we'll also talk about that struggle and what's to come. That is tomorrow at 10 a.m. Your Call is produced here at KALW. To listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. Laura Flynn produced today's show. Stephanie Porcel is our intern. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. And Kevin Vance is our studio engineer. You can email us, feedback@yourcallradio.org. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. Thank you for joining us.